Chapter 6. This is about interpreting ratios, because interpreting is what we ultimately do as human beings. Reviewing in slide 2 our house, or the point of the argument, is supported by the statistics, but we know the statistics are socially constructed. Lots of choices going on, choices in the context area, the assembly area, randomness and error. We're working again on context, confounding. Chapter 4, 5, and 6. Context is big. Slide 3. As we said before, context, what did you take into account? What did you control for? And what didn't you take into account? These are things that are called confounders. They are found along with, and they can confound or confuse a person when they're not taken into account. Now, we've talked about comparisons in Chapter 2. We've talked about comparing ratios in Chapter 4. Chapter 5. We talked about ratios in 4, comparison of ratios in 5. And now we want to pull the whole thing together and talk about how the English grammar here can confuse us. Slide 4. The three big topics in this chapter: inverse percentages. Now, these it's different than opposite, because if we had most CEOs had a pet, maybe 60% of CEOs had a pet, and I said, what's the opposite percentage? You might say, well, that's a CEO that didn't have a pet. That's not what we're talking about here. Inverse means we flip the subject and the predicate. So let's take a look at this one. Most CEOs had a pet as a kid. And it seems to follow pretty readily. If you want your kid to rise to the highest levels of influence, become a CEO, get them as a pet as a kid. And you can make up a little story on how this is going to work. Teach us some responsibility for others. Need to be there, be reliable, be resourceful. All these good things. But what you're going to discover is this is a percentage. Most CEOs had a pet. More than half of CEOs had a pet. More than 50% of CEOs had a pet. But typically the percentage you're given is not the one you're interested in. You're interested in the inverse of this. So being able to identify when you're getting the inverse of what you want is going to be very helpful. Second topic. Three-factor percentages. Percentages are okay when you have just two factors, but when you get three, it really overloads the human mind. So if I say the percentage of male school dropouts who go to prison, is that the same as the percentage of males who drop out and go to prison? When you hear that many terms, I don't know about you, but my mind just kind of ODs. It's like, I don't know. But when we slow down and take a look at these, we're going to realize, without knowing anything about the particulars, we know which one of these two is going to be bigger. If one's bigger, we know which one is going to be in advance. No data required. Third topic, medical tests. You can buy medical tests at your local drugstore for HIV, hepatitis C, etc. In the coming years, we're going to see a flood of medical tests that you can buy at your drugstore. And on the side, they're going to say things like 99% accurate. Well, how can a test be 99% accurate and be less than 50% accurate in predicting whether a person, such as you, who tests positive, actually has the disease? And that's what you want to know. If the test comes back positive, do you have the disease? You look at the box, it says 99% accurate. But you're going to see in this chapter how the accuracy in predicting can be far less than the accuracy on the side of the box. So that's our three topics for Chapter 6. Topic 1, inverse percentage. When we talk about a percentage, we typically have two groups. There's a predictor group and an outcome group. And there are two ways you can form a percentage. Most CEOs, let's say being a CEO is the outcome, and having a pet as a predictor group. Most CEOs had a pet. That's the first kind. I'm saying that's very weak in predicting. Whereas if I say most kids who had pets become CEOs, this is much stronger in predicting. It moves from what is known, that you got a pet, to what is uncertain, becoming a CEO in the future. So what's the moral? You need to know your groups. Looking forward, What is known? All I know is whether the kid has a pet or not. What's unknown? Uncertain. Being a CEO 40 years later, 30 years later. I want the prediction, I want the form of a percentage that has the predictor group as the whole. Most kids who have a pet become CEOs. Now, if you've got that piece of data, I'm very interested. But when you give me the other one, most CEOs had a pet. No, very weak evidence. Most people in business had a pet. Most adults had a pet when they were a kid. This is very weak, but it gives high percentages and it catches the unwary. So at least you can identify that one readily. Slide 6, three-factor percentages. We'll do the algebra first and then do a picture second. So we've got two forms here, the percentage of A and B. Think of this as like an adjective noun. Who are C? Some third item. In the second form, the percentage of A, who are BC? Or BC is an adjective noun, combination of two factors. Technical terms would be intersection. As I said, the form in syntax is adjective noun. Now, if there's any difference, we know that the combination of two groups is less than either of the groups. That's AB is less than A. B combined with C is less than C. From this, we can see the number one form is always less than the number two. Take a look at the example at the bottom of slide 6. The percentage of U.S. kids 15 to 24 who died from suicide, as opposed to, number two, the percentage of deaths of U.S. kids 15 to 24 that were suicides. In the first one, the pie is kids. The slice is suicide deaths. In the second one, the pie is deaths. The slice is suicides. Can you see which one of these percentages is going to be bigger? Suicides is a much larger slice of deaths than died from suicide is of all kids. The second one is going to be the larger. There are various ways of looking at this that we'll get into. Slide 7. Let's take a look at some more examples. We've got unemployed black males. First one, the percentage of black males who are unemployed. The second one, the percentage of males who are unemployed blacks. Which is bigger, black males or males? Well, males is bigger. And looking at the tail end, which is bigger, unemployed or unemployed blacks? Well, unemployed is bigger than unemployed blacks. So, males is bigger than blacks. Unemployed blacks is smaller than unemployed. You've got a small denominator, unemployed blacks, a small numerator, unemployed blacks, a large denominator, males. The second one is much smaller than the first. Much smaller. So you can see two people arguing on TV. One person says, do you realize that only 3% of males are unemployed blacks? We don't have a problem here. The other person is saying, do you realize that 25% of black males are unemployed? And you say, are they saying opposite things about the same group? No. There's been a movement of one term from whole to part, and that changes everything. Take a look at the second example on slide 7. We're looking at seniors in nursing home with no families. We've got two statistics. 30% of seniors are in nursing homes with no families. Second one, 30% of seniors with no families are in nursing homes. And you can see what stays the same. Seniors is whole in both, and nursing home is part in both, with the main verb are separating part from whole. What's shifting is no family. In the first one, no family is part. In the second one, no family is whole. You can immediately see which group has the smaller part. Number two, nursing homes. I apologize. Number one has the smaller part. You have to be in a nursing home and have no family. So the one with the smaller part, that's the smaller percentage. So if could both these tests be true at the same time in the same place? No way. Unless you get into some exotic circumstance where everybody has a family. But if one of these is wrong, the percentage is too high, which one is it? Immediately we can say it's number one. Number one should be smaller than number two. Now, you may not have picked up on the algebra in slide 6. You may not be quite following the wording in slide 7. Maybe a picture in slide 8 will help. So, on the left, we've got the percentage of A who are BC. A is the entire pie. B and C are little slices. And the overlap between B and C is the BC combo. You can see that that BC slice is a very small part of A. Whereas in the circle on the right, we've got the percentage of A and B. It's the combination of A and B that's forming the entire pie. This pie is much smaller than the pie A by itself. And in this pie, C is a much larger segment. So, the second percentage is going to be much larger than the first. Slide 9. To see how this assembly works, in choosing the whole, let's take a look at a table. This is going to push your mind to the max. I'm not saying the numbers are accurate. I'm saying if they were, and I believe they are, could we interpret them? This has to do with greenhouse gas concentrations. Looking at the left-hand column, we see 100% column. And we say, well, then the different rows are little parts of all of these greenhouse gases. 95% of all greenhouse gases are water vapor. And at that point, carbon dioxide is only 3.6%. Sometimes people leave out water vapor as a greenhouse gas, and when you do that, carbon dioxide becomes 72%. Most of the greenhouse gas, the most common greenhouse gas in the second column, is carbon dioxide. Depends entirely on whether you leave in or take out water vapor. Now the third one gets into the man-made component as a percentage of each type. The man-made, we don't produce that much water. Of the carbon dioxide, we produce about 3%. Of the methane, 18%. And CFCs, almost two-thirds. That's where we're a big producer. But if I want to minimize this, I can take these man-made percentages, look at the various concentrations, and create the far right column of numbers, where it has the types as a percentage of the man-made, and say that only 17% of man-made greenhouse gases involve CFCs. Doesn't sound like it's very large. You see what's going on here? The choice of the whole is what determines the size of the percentage. This is assembly involving context, the choice of a whole. And you need to be able to see that when somebody's giving you a percentage, what whole did they use? What whole could they have used? Why did they pick the one they did? Third topic, slide 10, medical tests. You may not be familiar with the O.J. Simpson trial, but we're going to rerun it here in like 30 seconds. O.J. is accused of killing his wife, Nicole, and they don't have any witnesses. There's no evidence he was there, but they discovered this glove, and they've identified some blood in the glove as matching him. It was found at the scene of the crime. The expert for the prosecution stands up and says, there's only one chance in a million of an error in identifying O.J. as the person whose blood matches the blood found in this glove. That's the only piece of evidence supplied by the prosecution. You're thinking, O.J.'s lawyer has to take out that statistic. O.J.'s lawyer stands up and says, We accept this one chance in a million of error. You're thinking, O.J. needs a new lawyer, quickly. But O.J.'s lawyer goes on and says, we will use this statistic to show there's a 90% chance our client is innocent. You're sitting there saying, wait a minute, we've got one chance in a million of error, and somehow this guy is going to turn this into a 90% chance his client is innocent. This is a miracle. This is better than turning water into wine. Let's see how it's done. We need two terms. One, accuracy, quality. It's the opposite of the error. It's the percentage of people that are guilty that test positive. And we're saying this test, almost 100% accurate. Whereas prediction is where we look at the outcome of the test. Do you test positive or negative? OJ tested positive. And say, what percentage of the people that test positive had the outcome, are guilty? You see the inverse percentage showing up here in the medical test? I want to show you a very simple technique for handling this kind of thing. It involves counts. In this case, let's supposing we had one guilty person and 9 million innocent people, because this occurred in L.A. Lots of innocent people running around. If we give the test to the guilty person, let's just say the test goes off. There's one person that tests positive, and that's the guilty person. Okay? Whereas in the innocent column, this test makes one mistake every million people. So if we test 9 million people, it's going to make 9 mistakes. It's going to come back saying positive 9 times. These are false positives. Shouldn't. But now if we look at all the people that test positive, the 9 innocent and the 1 guilty, we got a total of 10. 9 of the 10 are innocent. And OJ's lawyer says, I rest my case. There's a 90% chance my client is innocent. If the standard is guilty beyond reasonable doubt, you can't find him guilty. And the jury is going to be shaking their heads saying, how can a test that has an error of only 1 in a million be so bad? It's because the test is confirming, not predicting. We'll come back to that after we look at the next slide, 11, on medical tests. And I'm going to use diseased as the outcome rather than innocent or guilty, because that's normally where we see it. The outcome is either yes or no for the question of whether you have a disease or not. The test comes back either negative or positive. These are the rows. In the upper left-hand corner is a case where the person has no disease and the test comes back negative. This is fine. It's a true negative. It's a negative result and it's true. That's good news. In the lower right-hand corner, the person has the disease and the test comes back positive. And I can't say that having the disease is a good thing, but at least it's accurate. You're dealing with reality here. We have a true positive. It's the other two cells, the off-diagonal cells, that are the errors. Taking the lower left cell in the no diseased column, the positive row, this is a positive result, but it's false. It's a false positive. It's a false alarm. You go into the doctor, the doctor says you tested positive, and you think, oh my God, what do I have to do? And it's a false alarm, and you don't know it. That's an error. Second kind of error is in the upper right-hand corner under the yes, you have the disease. The test comes back negative. And you're smiling to yourself, God, I was really worried, but I guess I don't have it. In fact, this is a false negative. It's a false negative. It's a silent alarm. You should be doing something, and you don't know it. It's an error. So, how do we work out problems? Take a look at slide 12. Suppose you're given two statistics. Only 0.1% of the population had the disease in question, and this test is 95% accurate. It's an error only 5% of the time. And the question is, how well does it predict? Well, you might say, well, it should 95% of the people that test positive should have the disease. That's not what accuracy is. Go back to slide 10. Accuracy is the percentage of the outcome, the percentage of diseased that test positive. Prediction is percentage of the positives that have the disease. So we're given 95% of the diseased test positive. But when we start, we don't have any numbers. The simple method that I advocate is start with step one in the lower right-hand corner, drop in a large whole number, like 1,000, 10,000, 100,000. Anything big enough so you don't have to deal with fractional people. So I started with 100,000 people. The only statistic I can use at this point is my first one. 0.1%, 1 in 1,000 have the disease. I have 100,000 people here. 100 of those people have the disease. I don't know who they are, but 100 of them have it. That's step two. And from step one and two, I can squeeze out the 99.9 in the lower left-hand corner. Now I'm ready to apply the 95% accuracy statistic. I go to the yes column. 95% of those that yes have the disease, 95% of the 100 test positive. That's how I get the 95 immediately above the 100. When I'm given steps 2 and 3 in the yes column, I can squeeze out the 5 above it by subtraction. I then go over to the no column. I got 99,900 people. 95% of these test accurately. 5% test in error. And an error here would be the positives. Now you have to use your calculator here to get these numbers, but you're going to get the numbers shown. The minute you've got the left-hand column and the center column filled out, you can then add across and fill out the counts in the far right. Now you have the entire table filled out. You can answer, using the stuff you did in Chapter 4, any percentage question. So, what percentage of positives have the disease? What percentage of positives answered would be in the yes column? Well, it's 95 in the yes column out of the 5,090. That's the percentage. Certainly less than 100 out of 5,000. 1 out of 50. Less than 2%. It's like, wait a minute. This is not an accurate test. Not an accurate test at all. Take a look at slide 13. Before on slide 12, we were dealing with a very rare disease. In slide 13, we're dealing with a common disease. 5% of the people have the disease. The test is still 95% accurate. And again, we're confirming our test error is 100% minus our test accuracy. So our test error is 5%. I'll skip the third and fourth lines for a moment. Look at the table. Again, I'm starting with 100,000 people. I take the 5% that have the disease, put that under the yes column. That's how I got my 5,000 people. Given steps 1 and 2, I can squeeze out the 95 in the lower left. And now I'm ready to go to step 3, applying the 95% accurate. 95% accurate on the yes column gives me 4,750. 95% accurate on the no column, or 5% error in the no column, gives me 4,750 in the positive. When I add the two 4,750s together, I get 9,500. So, what percentage of the positives test have the disease? And it's like 50-50. 50% have the disease. So here's when we've got our rules that if the error rate equals the disease prevalence, then our prediction is a 50-50 prediction. If our error rate is greater than the disease prevalence, then our prediction is less than 50%. Slide 14. To wrap it up, context involves what's taken into account, can influence counts or totals, influence averages, percents, or rates. Part whole rates, one of the most common ways of taking into account a factor. These percentages have many uses, but they are often, all too often, misused by people that don't understand. Thank you.